Hello everyone, so let us continue on with part two and the final part of questions that faith-based people would ask me. They would ask me, what are my views on corporal punishment, child discipline, spanking, whooping, beating, hitting, striking children and using inanimate objects to physically, quote-unquote, discipline children? I don't see physical discipline as actual discipline. And therefore, I see the concepts of physical discipline, corporal punishment, child discipline, spanking, beating, whooping, hitting, and physically striking children as all forms of abuse, misuse, debasement, degradation, desecration, injury, damage, harm, hurt, wrong, injustice, insult, mistreatment, violation, malevolence, mishandling, mismanagement, pollution, defilement, perversion, oppression, victimization, corruption, violent offenses, maltreatment, and impairments. I am an authoritative parenting person. I'm a positive parenting person. I'm a peaceful parenting person. I'm a respectful parenting person. I'm a wise parenting person. I'm a connective parenting person. I'm a gentle parenting person. I'm a conscious parenting person. I'm a just right parenting person. I'm a heart-centered parenting person. And I'm a benevolent parenting person. Then they'll ask me, what are my views on sexual education, abstinence-only education? Comprehensive sexuality education has been proven to be effective at promoting sexual responsibility and discouraging sexual irresponsibility. And that abstinence-only education has been proven to be ineffective at discouraging sexual irresponsibility. And there's no encouragement of sexual responsibility that has been proven when it comes to abstinence-only education too. So I oppose abstinence-only sexual education and I support comprehensive sexuality education. Then the next question that they'll ask me is, what are my views on homeschooling educational choice? Well, I would say you can't totally escape the secular world. Jesus never did. Jesus never does. And Jesus never will. So make sure you have trained expertise that are veterans in terms of education advocates and education activists who everybody can properly assess the children Some children are do better in public schools. Some children do better in private schools. Some children do better at homeschooling. But either way, make sure that there's educational egalitarianism where, okay, if you have kids from prestigious families, one percenters, then they get in certain, they get into well-performing schools. But the ones who don't come from families of the 1%, most people, oh, they go to these lackadaisical lousy schools. That should never happen. So I think homeschooling, educational choice should be diversely, internally enriching for all the children, but don't have a us versus them attitude towards secular people, sex situations, because that's not the heart of Jesus. Jesus engaged secularity with, as the church, y'all call it grace and truth, but he was never churchianity about it. He was never preachy or churchy about it. He was very much helping people to understand how their lives can be better, but he never made them feel insignificant. So that's how I feel about that subject. So then they'll ask me, what are my views on the creation-evolution controversy? Evolution is widely supported by scientists and scholars. I can't say the same for creationism. I would say in school, you can present different forms of thought without trying to control the thinking of the children. Children should be independent thinkers. So in non-religious schools, Christian education should not be done there. That's not a part of the schools. Now, Christian education should be taught in Christian schools. Like if you go to a Catholic high school, or, you know, for an example, that would make sense. But in non-religious schools, you can't promote that because the school wasn't designed for Christianity. Period. So that's how I feel about that. Then they would ask me, what are my views on the war on drugs? It has been proven to be a miserable failure because it has been shown to be of racism. It has been shown to be of sexism. It has been shown to be of classism. It has been shown to be of colorism. It has been shown to be about discrimination based on hair texture. It has been shown to be of lookism. It has been shown to be of rankism. It has been shown to be of even ableism too. So the war on drugs is fruitless to me. I hate the war on drugs. So then the question that they'll ask me is, what are my views on the legal drinking age? Well, I feel like for me, I dare say that alcohol is for adults and adults only. Therefore, yes, the legal drinking age, I like that it's 21. But more importantly, I feel like mental sound-mindedness should complement the legal drinking age. I think they should focus more on, does this person have a healthy brain? That's not ableism. I'm talking about, are they able to be responsible with the alcohol? Are they able to make sane decisions regarding the alcohol? So I think that that's important. A lot of times, I could see how people go, if you serve in the army at 18 and vote at 18, why can't I drink at 18? I've always had a tough time with that because I'm 18 to do this, but I'm fully an adult at 21 when I do that. I'm still a teenager, but I'm grown. But I'm not fully grown to my early 20s. And so that has been a controversy for decades. I've always felt like everything should be at either 18 or 21. Y'all gotta pick and stick with it, right? I feel like there should be mental health checkups to make sure the person is able to not have any capability of alcohol use disorder too. That's how I feel about that subject. Faith-based people ask me, what are my views on harm reduction? Well, I love the fact that it's about decreasing negative consequences of recreational drug use. That's a positive. I like the fact that harm reduction is about decreasing negative consequences of sexual activity without requiring abstinence. That's a big positive. And I love that harm reduction is about recognizing that those unable or unwilling to stop can still make positive change to protect themselves and others. That is awesome. And reducing the adverse consequences from drug use, sexual activity, phenomenal. I love harm reduction, harm minimization, because I believe in the do no harm principle. I believe in conflict management. So I love that harm reduction is about the range of intentional practice and public health policies designed to lessen the negative social and slash or physical consequences associated with various human behaviors, both legal and illegal. I love harm reduction. So many believers would ask me, what is my view on drug decriminalization? I feel that drugs should be decriminalized instead of locking up drug users. Why not give them life skills programs along with rehabilitation so they won't be addicted to drugs, but more importantly, they can come out of rehab and life skills programs. They have each and every life skill that they're trained in, so they can also have mental health examinations, brain examinations to make sure that, okay, is there any diseases or any infections could be flaring up? Are they capable of any kind of ailments, or, you know, are they sane? Can they be what is called productive members of society? So I think, and doctor dental checkups too. And I think once there's a pass, once all these exams and tests are passed and they're fully healthy, that I think decriminalization will keep them from having the ability to live a totally different life, instead of a criminal record keeping them from handling money differently. So I'm all for drug decriminalization. Many believers would ask me, what are my views on the global warming controversy? Well, I do feel that climate change is real based upon me studying research that causes wildfires. For example, in California, you hear a lot of wildfire stories. You hear about the planets heating up. You hear about certain animals facing extinction crisis. And you hear a lot about loitering causing certain environments to be uninhabitable. And you hear a lot about the air and the waters being polluted, which kills certain sea animals and which can cause toxins to lung cancer a person. So I think climate change is serious. And I think that the progressive movement, you know, like the Green New Deal, I think would be best at combating environmentalism concerns. So that's where I stand on the global warming controversy. Then next, the believers would ask me, what are my views on the, anti-gender movement? Well, I never really heard a lot about it when I was in the church world, but I'm not in favor of the anti-gender movement, because obviously it has political right wing and far right people in it. So obviously no. And the fact that trans exclusionary radical feminist TERFs, which I strongly disagree with, the fact that they utilize anti-gender rhetoric, nope. The fact they oppose some LGBTQI plus rights, unacceptable to me. They oppose some reproductive rights, unacceptable to me. They oppose some government gender policies, unacceptable to me. Wait a minute. They oppose government gender policies that are in favor of gender sexual diversity. That's unacceptable to me. They oppose gender equality. That's unacceptable to me. They oppose gender studies, academic departments. That's unacceptable to me. And they oppose gender mainstream. That is so unacceptable to me. I dislike the anti-gender movement, plain and simple. Next, believers would ask me, what are my views on age of consent? I feel that I wish the legal system makes everything at 18 or 21 when it comes to tobacco, alcohol, voting, serving the army, and having sex. Why not make everything either all at 18 or all at 21? Because people are going, okay, when do I have my full adult rights? Because 18-21 is confusing to a lot of people, including me. So age of consent is beautiful, but how does that affect teenagers and underage people when they start sexually experimenting and having sex? Would they be lumped in with sex offenders? That shouldn't happen, but the legal system has not been clear on that. So I love the concept of age of consent. I just wish the legal system would stop corrupting the concept of age of consent. And also, why not focus more on mental health examinations? So just because you could do something at a certain age, if you're not psychologically ready, then that person shouldn't be doing it. So believers would ask me, what are my views on circumcision controversies? I don't think everybody should get circumcised because not everybody needs to be circumcised. I've never been a fan of genital mutilation. I've never been a fan of non-consensual genital modification. And I feel like circumcision is definitely a controversy in the church, for example, because some people go, well, you know, in the Bible, that was a part of being Jewish, but Jesus is the center of Christianity, so maybe as Christians we gotta do circumcision, while other people in the church go, that was back then, that's not what we do anymore, and we don't need to be circumcised to be Christian. And we don't need to be circumcised to be Jewish. So I don't see why it's a controversy. So circumcision is right for some people, wrong for others. So then believers would ask me, what are my views on feminism? Well, I think feminism should incorporate non-white women first. So feminism should be one of the realities of life that gives black women, indigenous women, women of color, Hispanic women, Asian women, African women, South American women, Central American women, women of the Caribbean islands, and it can also give white women a sense of belonging too. Because I noticed some women of color have said that they felt like feminism was focused on white women, but not them. I think feminism should give all women and girls a sense of belonging in that white women are equal to all the other kinds of women too. So I'm for feminism. So then believers would ask me, what are my views on LGBTQI plus rights and same-sex marriage? Like I said in the last episode, I feel like science has made it clear that transgenderism is legitimate and gayness is legitimate. Science does not support the two-gender belief, and science does not support the heteronormativity trauma complex either. Therefore, I support same-sex marriage. I support non-binary people, gender non-conforming people, transgender people being married too. So then believers will ask me, what are my views on polyamory, like I said in the last episode. There are types of polyamory, and let me explain those. So according to choosingtherapy.com, there are triad, quad, V, solo polyamory, poly, Q, hierarchical poly, naked partners, kitchen table poly, parallel poly, polyfidelity, relationship anarchy. Now, these forms of polyamory works for the people involved. But obviously not everyone is into polyamory, so that doesn't work for everybody. Personally, for me, I am open to triad. I'm open to quad. I'm open to V. I'm the most open to solo polyamory. I'm open to polycule. I'm open to hierarchical poly as long as I don't have to live with them every day. I'm open to anchor part as long as I don't have to live with them every day. I'm open to kitchen table poly. I'm open to parallel poly. I'm open to poly fidelity. I'm open to relationship anarchy. As long as I don't have to have biological children and I don't have to live with them every day, I don't mind sharing finances as long as, you know, they don't take from my account, take from their account. It's like if we split the bill on some things, that's fine. I just don't want to have to share my bank account with them. That's where I draw the line. But I'm open to all these forms of polyamory personally. Okay. So, what are my views on sex work? Right? I'm address all the hot button issues because a lot of believers like to go there, fine. I'm going to be direct with them. Well, I feel like many believers would say, honestly, you're very rarely going to legal brothels. Do you think, Antonio, that could taint your global itinerant humanitarianism, global itinerant environmentalism, global itinerant animal cruelty prevention? Honestly, I say no. Here's why. Notice, if it's legal, then nobody's being exploited. Also, because I have a servant leader's heart. I have a quiet, gentle spirit. That's loud, just not the way the world would say it's loud. But my spirit is heard and seen by people, you know. So because I'm heart-centered, nobody in their right mind would look at what I'm doing as exploiting. Because one, exploitation means dishonesty. If I'm upfront about who and what I am and who and what I do, then, and you also know that I'm respectful of women, men, non-binary people, and that I would never put kids in adult situations, so I don't feel like I would be tainting my calling or my family or my friends or anybody, because I don't do anything to access. I'm also don't do anything to the point of too much restraint. And I don't bankrupt myself or anybody else. I'm free of scandals, and I wouldn't be with anybody that's full of scandals. So, because I'm up front, It's impossible to emotionally blackmail me. It's impossible to rub anything about my life in my face because I'm so outspoken about certain parts of my life that have been rough. So I would never put myself in ridiculous circumstances, not even other people. So because I treat people right, and I treat myself right, the sex work world would never have a problem with me. I never have a problem with them. And people outside the sex work world wouldn't have a problem with them because I don't live a life of being a self-destructive behavioral type of person. So I am for the decriminalization of sex work also because sex work can be therapeutic to some people. I'm not saying that replaces therapy, but, you know, what I'm saying is that it has helped some people to be sexually at home with themselves so they can have sexual inner peace and sexual world peace, however they define it for themselves. Many people of faith will ask me, what are my views on the sexual revolution? This is how I feel about it. I am happy that the sexual revolution normalizes contraception and the pill. I think that's awesome. I'm glad that the legalization of abortion was a part of the sexual revolution, and that the legalization of abortion will return once the Democrats take over Congress, House, and Senate. Whenever, I don't know when that will happen. I'm grateful for the normalization of premarital sex. I'm grateful for the normalization of homosexuality. I'm grateful for the normalization of transgenderism. I'm grateful for the normalization of masturbation. I'm grateful for the normalization of alternative forms of sexuality. That's for people of age. I'm grateful for the normalization of pornography. I think those are good things and I'm grateful for the normalization of lawful public nudity. I think that's awesome because all these things can be therapeutic to some people without replacing therapy, of course. It can help people to be sexually self-assured and sexually reassured too. So I'm a member of the Sex Revolution, Sex Liberation. I'm a member of Free Love, too. I'm a member of Gay Liberation, and I enjoy the golden age of porn. I'm for the alternative forms of sexuality, too. As long as it's for people of age and no crimes are committed, I don't see why not. Many believers would ask me, what are my views on red state versus blue state divide? Oh, man. So, I feel this way. I feel that a lot of times in my experience being in church, not everybody in it, but there were some people in church that confuse red states for the kingdom of God. And there are some people that confuse blue states for the kingdom of Satan. In other words, they felt like red states were heaven on earth, blue states were hell on earth. And there was this demonization, and it still happens, sadly, of if you're a Democrat, you're not Christian, which is not true. That no party owns Jesus. No political party owns Jesus. No political ideology owns Jesus. Some people, this is how they interpret the Bible. Some people interpret the Bible through social justice. And social justice simply means everyone's human rights stay intact. Everyone gets to have the right to quality food, quality healthcare, quality housing, quality schools, quality employment, quality entrepreneurship. You get to have clothing, and you get to have running water to bathe in as well as to use for toiletry. And you get to drink healthy water. That's basically what social justice means. So, social justice has more than one definition. In the church, people can agree on social justice. They may define it not completely the same way, but the same concept, therefore. Some people are Republicans because they feel like their positions best reflects how to take care of the least of these and how to bring in inner peace and world peace. Some people feel like, well, the Democrat Party is the best way to take care of the least of these and to bring inner peace and world peace, but they both love the same Jesus of Nazareth, Jesus Christ. Jesus of Galilee, Jesus of Jerusalem, Jesus of Bethany, and they're all the same Jesus. I'm just naming places he was according to the Bible. Jesus of the Jordan River, he was baptized there. So I feel like in church, people have to understand that God, according to their beliefs, allows complexities, gray areas, because if we could black and white everything, then you can't have any pleasant surprises in life if that were the case. Maybe God, according to their beliefs, allows gray areas and complexities. And one of the reasons why is so pleasant surprises can keep being enjoyable for us. And if you have black and white thinking on everything, then you can't truly enjoy intellectualism. You can't enjoy inner growth and outer growth. You cannot really have an affinity for people. I don't want everything figured out because some knowledge can be traumatic. So gray areas and complexities don't bother me. So I think the red state versus blue state divide is mediocre. I think it's foolish because if Republicans and Democrats, independent centrists and moderates, and progressive and libertarians and Green Party people can all recognize that, let's put all the good ideas on the table and utilize them. That's what I never understood about politics. Instead of, hey, your good ideas can't be put on the table of mine, I'm thinking to myself, that is illogical, okay? All good ideas that have been scientifically and scholarly proven to better the lives of people, especially the less fortunate, put all the good ideas that the Republicans have, all the good ideas that Democrats have, all the good ideas that the Independents have, all the good ideas that Libertarians have, all the good ideas that Green Party people have, all the good ideas that the Progressives have, all the good ideas that Liberals have, all the good ideas that centrists and moderates have. Just put them all out there, and that's how you get the best legislation done. Moving right along. So, people of faith will ask me, how do I feel about law and order? Well, today is a rough day for 3 years in a row, January 6th. And I think law and order should have freedom of police brutality, freedom of police abuse, freedom of police corruption, freedom of police harassment. I think law and order should do a better job of being kind to Black folks, Hispanic folks, and just indigenous folks, and people of color in general. I don't think law and order should just only benefit rich white men. I think law and order should benefit everybody. I think law and order should not be about, okay, I call myself a Christian, but I'm a racist judge, and I'm going to put you Blacks in jail, even though it's obvious you should be exonerated innocent because you clearly, evidentially did not do anything wrong. And I'm going to split up Black families and slap Jesus' name on it. I hate that. Law and order should benefit the least of these the most. That's how I feel about the subject. Gun rights. Oh, come on, man. Put gun rights and gun control together, and that's how you get responsible gun ownership. That's how I feel about the subject. Next, immigration reform. Comprehensive immigration reform. It's really simple in terms of the basic things. Make sure that all the trained professionals, social workers, economists, psychologists, psychiatrists, scholars, scientists, coaches, consultants who are trained in the world of immigration, and politicians who care, and people of the cloth, people of faith who care, and secular people who care, get all these people who are well-versed in immigration involved so they can do proper screening, proper documentation. Meaning, don't make it hard for them to fill out paperwork so they can be here in honor of the law. But also, understand that people come here because there's no human rights protections where they're from. For example, if you live in Iraq, Iran, Afghanistan, you have to worry about the Taliban, because the Taliban, they can go anywhere they want to. They don't just stay in Afghanistan. Sometimes, if they feel like going to Pakistan, they will. They can go anywhere they want to. Terrorist groups, you can't tell them where to go, where not to go. Even if you try to, they'll kill you. So, I do recognize that if I live where the Taliban is, but I was fortunate to sneak away, I was able to sneak on a plane. I didn't want to sneak on the plane, but that was the only way I can keep me and my kids and my husband or my spouse, because in Middle Eastern countries, you can't just be boyfriend and girlfriend, you have to be married. So, okay, I took my wife and my kids with me. We snuck on a plane. Yeah, we broke the law. We weren't trying to break the law, but I didn't want me and my family killed. I want us to have photo albums outside of Afghanistan or Iraq, right? And we made it over to America. And some people sneak away by ships, by boats. They really go, all right, we're going to figure this out. And we made it to America. Sometimes you have those servant leaders who will sneak people out of their countries. Oh, that still happens. And they go, all right, cool. I'm in America. Somehow I made it at the border. But I'm not trying to break America's laws. I want to respect America's laws. So most people who are immigrants, like, help me to be lawfully here. I will go through your process. I had to break the law where I was because, you know, there's no laws against terrorist groups killing families that don't completely adhere to them. So I think in America, we have to be kind about that. I think those kind of immigrants should get a pass for breaking the law where they were. Because if I'm in a country and my children's human rights are a cruel, sick joke to the Taliban, and my human rights as their father and my wife's human rights as their mother are both considered cruel, sick jokes, then I was practicing civil disobedience technically. I'm just trying to be a good, I feel like I'm best at being a good parent and a good husband, and my wife feels the same way as being a good mother, good wife somewhere else. We can't be that in Iraq. So, and the border, I think what people have to do is understand immigrants don't have, a lot of immigrants don't have access to America's laws. So they're doing what they know how, and they're learning America's laws as they go along. Once they get to America, people start telling them this is how it works here. So I think what people should do is make sure that people come here with good intentions. They have good intentions. Don't push them away. If they don't mean America harm, okay. Give them grace for them doing what they had to do, because they feel like our family will be best at making life great in America. In Iraq, we cannot do that because the law makes it clear that we can't. Because there's no laws to protect us, and only protects the Taliban. So, I do believe in comprehensive immigration reform. I think anybody that has been proven to be terroristic, send them back to their country. But most immigrants are not terroristic, so most immigrants should be allowed to be here. So I am for comprehensive immigration reform. I am for, you know, also, I think mental health examinations should be done, not to stigmatize people. We got to care about the mental health of immigrants. Like, okay, clearly you're under duress because of where you were, but we're going to help you to overcome the duress while you're here. That's how I feel about the subject. And remember, Jesus was a refugee. Jesus was an immigrant. Jesus was an asylum seeker. Jesus would be a DACA recipient. Jesus was a foreigner. Jesus would have been an orphan if you were alive today. And Jesus was considered a stranger. Jesus migrated. Jesus was a migrant. And Jesus had to flee where he was to go to Egypt because, according to the Bible, Herod was trying to commit infanticide. He wanted Jesus to be a victim of infanticide. So imagine somebody trying to kill a baby, and this baby is considered the son of God according to the Bible. So Jesus would be for conference immigration reform, for sure. How do I feel about the crypto wars? Well, I've been learning about it, and I do feel like let me choose my words carefully. I feel like any financial system, people have to be careful about electronically and in-person sending and giving of money or expanding money. My views on it from the top of my head are that there should be a way to increase money for people, but I feel like it has to be, it should be protected from internet viruses. I feel like that there should be a way that it doesn't pose any risk in terms of people losing money. As I read a little bit more, because I'm still learning it, I think, yes, limiting the public and foreign nations' access to cryptography strong enough to thwart decryption? By national intelligence agencies. Especially by national security agencies. Okay, because sometimes people can put encoded information that may promote any kind of terrorism. Then I support that kind of limiting. Anything sent should be safe for America, meaning there's nothing in it that can be criminally coded in order for criminals to go, okay, we can send messages to each other through this so we can do our crime family business. No. So, I like to keep it simple because sometimes people make this kind of information so complicated. Yeah, anything backdoored, that's criminal-minded. No backdoor. I'm sorry, I must have been thinking of cryptocurrency, but cryptography, the way I'm reading it right now, I feel like I feel like people have to examine computers. People have to examine technology to make sure there's no viruses, no criminally coded messages, and no crime organization spyware on these devices. Because sometimes if I'm a criminal and I'm from overseas, I might try to hijack American computers so I can make some Americans my criminal slaves. You have to be a part of my crime crew. So I think hijacking can happen, and that's what some criminals try to do overseas. It's like, if I can get access to America, then I can control them. So we have to be mindful of how people register and how people do software, because sometimes you can literally steal people's information, especially if you know their router or IP address. So when you do something on the computer, I think in America and overseas, it should be a sense of, hey, we can't sneak any kind of perverted material through the internet. And also keep in mind, some criminals are child abusers, so they may use cryptography to access children in the most barbaric of ways. So I support limiting cryptography and thwarting decryption. Let's have a look at the subject. I always try my best. If I don't know something, if I can get the gist of it, I can flow from my head. Okay, I'm gonna just roll through these. You know, I think I'm gonna make part three tomorrow. I'll make part three tomorrow because this is so much. How do I feel about the anti-war movement? Well, this is how I feel about it. The concept of religious wars, religious violence, religious persecution, religious terrorism have never been sanctioned by Jesus, according to Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. So I hate religious wars. I hate religious violence. I hate religious persecution. I hate religious terrorism. I feel like in our world, I am not a fan of the military industrial complex, because it's all about being wealthy off of violence, being wealthy off of murder, being wealthy off of robbing the poor of their rights, and keeping the poor in poverty, and increasing poverty against the poor. So I do understand that because of the human condition, we have to defend our country. But at the same time, the best way to defend our country is, one, you look after the least of these. That's the best way to, one, show compassionate love to the hurting, and two, stick it to the other countries who try to feud with you. Like, hey, we take care of our people. What about you? You don't do anything. It will have to force them to step up and take care of their least of these. So I don't have a problem with the anti-war movement. I totally get it. It's tough because how do you keep people alive if you don't go to war sometimes? You know, and like, sadly, war has to happen, but, you know, why war against the abused? They're traumatized, the victimized. Why war against them? So I don't have a problem with the anti-war movement. Capital punishment. Whew. I found a middle ground between allowance and abolition, because there are two sides to the issue. Normally there's support, then there's opposition. I found a middle ground between the two. Let's try to keep capital punishment as low in number and rates, RATS, as we humanly possibly can. We will always live in a world where there will be some governmental leaders that want to legally kill people they presume to be guilty. And it's like, okay, people, governments have been killing people for centuries, and I don't think that's ever going to end, because there will always be that one person like, I don't want them in jail. I want them dead myself, but I can't do it, so I'll have the legal executioners do it. So here's the thing. Let's have the lowest death penalty amount of capacity as best we can. That's how I feel about the subject. Now, what are my views? And plus, I want to make it clear. Capital punishment should not be more, let's legally kill blacks more than whites. No. Let's legally kill women more than men. No. Let's legally kill people we think look like immigrants than people we don't think look like immigrants. No. There should be no xenophobia, racism, sexism, classism, nor queerphobia when it comes to capital punishment. I don't think you should legally kill somebody for being gay and or trans, okay? I don't think you should legally kill someone for being a woman, for being an immigrant, for being black. No. But again, in terms of the usage of capital punishment, right? I feel like if we're going to go about it fair and square, okay, all the evidence clearly proves that they did what they did. There's no loopholing that, according to how their system works. Keep capital punishment extremely low. In fact, try your best to use that as your last resort. I think that should be a last resort thing. But let's keep the using as a last resort to its bare minimum, okay? So that's my middle ground, the subject, because I'm balancing the fact that I understand why people can get so mad at rapists and murderers that they want them dead. I get it. I also get why some people would go, but I believe in redemption. I believe in allowing them to repent. I believe in letting them, they can face the consequences of what they did, you know, in jail, but I want them to at least be productive citizens while they're locked up, or if they get out. I don't want them to be killed. I want them to turn from their wicked ways. So I'm balancing both perspectives in my middle ground, all right? So, how do I feel about reproductive rights, including birth control and its coverage by insurance? I don't have a problem with the Hyde Amendment, because I don't think it's bad to use federal money to obtain reasonable abortions, right? When I say reasonable, because all the reasons make sense for why that had to happen. I don't believe in getting an abortion just to get one. Like, it has to be sound-minded as to, okay, what makes you need one? And if the, you know, the reasons check out, okay, I respect that. I feel like if we provide for women and girls as a society, then we can keep abortion at its lowest amounts. I'm not demonizing people who get a lot of abortions. I'm not doing that because that's disheartening. What I'm saying is that studies have proven that under Democratic Party controlled administrations, Democratic Party administrations, they tend to provide social justice to women and girls, and because that gives women and girls a range of healthy options, they don't tend to get a lot of abortions. But abortions happen much more often when Republicans are running things, because the extremists in the Republican Party tend to deny social justice to girls and women. So again, I'm not saying it's bad to get a lot of abortions, because I understand that some people don't have the social justice they need, so they have to go to last resorts because where they live is misogynistic, is legal misogyny happening to them. Like, you're not allowing me to have all my options, so I had to terminate this pregnancy because you're not empowering me to fully understand all my reproductive rights, because a lot of people don't know all their reproductive rights because their government doesn't tell them. The government knows, just won't educate them. So I feel like insurances should definitely not make it difficult or premiums and deductibles. It should all be affordable, because some people try their best not to get pregnant. Some people are in families where everybody has to get pregnant because they may be in extremist families. And I feel like reproductive rights should be the most tailor-made for survivors of rape and domestic violence, and just violence in general. So I think it should have coverage by insurance. I don't mind paying tax money to women and girls in those situations. That's a proper usage of my money, in my view. And I do value birth control, because not all married couples want to have children. Not all unmarried couples want to have children. Not all people want to have children, so birth control keeps unwanted humans from existing. That's a good thing. Next, right to die movement and euthanasia. This is rough for me. I like the idea of people being able to live long lives. So when it comes to right to die movement, euthanasia, I feel that sometimes that's the only way to relieve the agony of the terminally illness sufferer. That may be harsh. That was unintentionally harsh. I feel like it's the best way to relieve the agony of the person who should never have to suffer, should never have to have a terminal illness. So I support euthanasia, because if you've tried every avenue to keep the person alive, medically, doctorally, and it's obvious this person will never be cured because there's no cure, and they'll never get better, bodily speaking, then they should have the right to legally not be here anymore. and Right to Die. I support the Right to Die movement because some people, they may find their peace by saying, we as a family have to agree to physically let me go. That may be the peace that some families get best that way. Universal health care. I feel like health care, anything, any human right should be universal in my view. So I value universal health care because it has been best proven to be the most sensitized to cost, to shipment, to systemization, to the proper equipment and proper tools and toolkits of the medicine, of the medical care. And I feel like universal health care, that covers more people because more people have more opportunities to have quality doctors, quality dentists, and it doesn't cost them a fortune to stay alive. Because universal health care is much better at keeping people from having to choose between their rent or their medicine. Some people have to make that decision. And I think what President Biden is doing is trying to limit that greatly, and I support that. I love universal health care because when I read the Bible, Jesus was a proponent of universal health care. He was healing every disease and sickness among the people, and the book of Matthew says that twice. So if we want to heal more viruses, heal more people, then universal health care is the way to go. Stem cell research. This is a tough one because it all goes back to the reproductive conversation, but this is how I feel about it. Human beings, according to scientists and scholars, have not been evidentially proven to be humans. Fetuses have not been evidentially proven to be humans. I'm just going by what credible scientists, credible scholars have to say. So, stem cell research, I want to make sure that I'm not being ignorant because I try my best to be as well educated as I possibly can. So I'm going to look at an article that does briefly mention this. Okay. So okay, when it comes to stem cell research, here we go. Stem cell research I'll read to you what the science says on LifeScience.com. Embryonic stem cell research. Here's the science. Embryonic stem cells come from human embryos. An embryo develops immediately after fertilization, is considered as such up until the 8th week of gestation, when it is referred to as a fetus. These cells have the ability to morph into any type in the body, such as a red blood cell or a nerve cell. Because of this flexibility, researchers can use embryonic stem cells to investigate potential treatments and cures for a number of human diseases, especially those where a certain type of cell becomes damaged or no longer functions as it should. Some diseases that could be helped by embryonic stem cell research include diabetes, cancer, and Parkinson's disease. Although adults have stem cells, these cells are much more limited in their ability to morph into different cell types. For example, an adult neural stem cell can only morph into a nerve cell. In other words, embryonic stem cells have much greater potential for research. In 2009, President Barack Obama, former President Barack Obama, wish he was still president. I love President Biden. No, I'm glad I voted for him. I will vote for him, Nick. I will vote for him in November of this year. Reversed a ban on federal funding for research into embryonic stem cells. I applaud that decision. However, researchers whose projects are funded by the government still must use existing lines of embryonic cells that are not allowed to create new cell lines because the rules forbid destroying embryos from which the stem cells are extracted. Ooh, that's a heart-tugging matter right there. Therefore, the initial extraction of stem cells from embryos still would depend on private funding. According to the National Institutes of Health, as long as stem cells are obtained from embryos that were produced by in vitro fertilization but are no longer needed, and the donors give permission for the embryos to be used for research purposes, federal funds can be used for research on the resulting stem cell lines. So I'm in favor of embryonic stem cell research based upon what the science says. Okay. I'm almost done, y'all. That's why I had to make a part three. You know what? I'm done. I'm tired. You can hear it in my voice. Part three, next episode. Before I end the episode, I just thought of something. Very rarely would I ever go to sex workers for sex. Here's why. Most of my sex is free. So I like to be healthily frugal. That's just me. And also, I very rarely date, very rarely have sex. And this is my message to faith-based people, because most people try to be normal. Because I'm extraordinary, I'm not society's normal, and I embrace that. Most people don't embrace extraordinary. Most people are the carbon copies of other people. Very few people in life are their own originals like me.